on Anthropologetic. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I have Lex and Preston here with me, as always.
Hey! My roots are planted in the past. Have you heard this song before? Do you know this song?
No, I haven't.
Who my life is changing past. Who I am is who I want to be. Man, all right, you have to watch this show. So we've talked about shows all the time, okay? I'm a survivor. This is a classic show. The girls who are listening, they know what show this is. It is, and it's going, and it's picking up steam on TikTok. So it is a trend that's happening. And the show is called Reba, from Reba McEntire. Have you heard that show? Uh-huh. It is such a good show. It's about Reba, and she's like a middle-aged woman in Texas, and she has like a real country accent. And she's like, you know, she has a daughter who is 17 and gets pregnant. And she moves the daughter and her now husband, who's also a 17-year-old, into her house, and she takes care of them. Wow. And so the whole trend that is happening right now on TikTok is people are saying like real dumb stuff, like every time I have to change the toilet paper roll, and then they'll play the theme song to Reba at the end. It's like, I'm a survivor.
Oh, okay. I've seen a few of them, but now it's clicking. Okay. That makes sense.
It's like you have to do like the most basic shit, but you're like, I really am thriving out here and being an adult while I'm changing the toilet paper. So we have been binge watching Reba over the last few days. Such a good show.
Is it on Netflix or Hulu? Or?
It's on Hulu.
Hulu, okay.
Oh, we're watching it on Hulu. I don't know if it's on Netflix. It might be.
I'll have to check. But yeah, no, that sounds like...
It's such a good show. So I am doing great. And sometimes, you know, I might just go into a country accent today.
Channeling his inner Reba.
Channeling my inner Reba McEntire or, you know, just my inner Texan. Saying right. How I was in Texas for about 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, thank you for having me.
You are a survivor. 10 years.
Dang. I know. My goodness. It was like the best and worst years of my life.
Yeah. Wow. 10 years. I can't imagine being in Texas for 10 years. 2 years was enough for me.
Don't go back, girl. You go. It's really a travesty out there. They don't know what the fuck they're doing in Texas. So.
How are you doing this week? Like,
I am good. Oh, I have an update for you guys on the whole bill issue she tried to charge me. So after playing, you know, weeks went by because she did not respond to my email in a timely fashion. We finally have a conversation Tuesday of this week with the CEO of the organization. So ultimately, pull the Band-Aid off. Ultimately, I did not pay that bill. And I told her I was not paying the bill. She accepted it. And she was like, we'll eat the cost. And I said, I know you will. And how we got there, though, was frustrating because she wanted to have this conversation with me and hadn't even looked into what happened. So how do you call someone, have a conversation, and you're not even prepared for the conversation?
Yeah.
So it was like she was calling me to, like, I guess, answer questions and then have me pay, I guess, me agreed to paying, but didn't realize that there was actually an issue that occurred on her end.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she threw her provider under the bus. She was like, I rely on every provider to do their own billing. And, you know, I don't know what happened. It seems like you were given two different bills. But on my end, I only see the final bill, you know, that you were issued in July. And I was like, nah, girl, I have the emails here I have the receipts also to prove it from my bank statements that you sent me a bill, a final bill in March that I paid for in full. And then 4 months later, here's another bill. So all that to say, she didn't know who she was talking to and who she was messing with. I did not pay that bill. I told her, you need to go and talk to, you know, the doctor who I was seeing and understand how she fucked up, because I did what I was supposed to do and I'm not paying it. And she was like, the practice will definitely eat the cost. I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. I said, I know you will. Okay. So
that's just, I like want to know what she was trying to like what she envisioned the conversation was going to be like, that she was going to just come in, you're going to agree to pay. Like if that's what she expected, then I don't know why she thought like you even had to have a conversation in the first place. You know?
Right. That's what I just didn't understand what her, because even her like starting off the conversation asking me what the problem is. It's like, you should know what the problem is, because I'm assuming that my provider or my therapist forwarded you all of the communication emails, mm-hmm. which apparently did not happen, ? But it now makes sense if every doctor is responsible for their own billing, which is a horrible system that should not be how any organization runs. But if that is the case, then it does make sense that my therapist maybe did not want to incriminate herself and tell the full truth. So, you know, it's just one of those things of like, girl, I don't have time. I don't have time to sit here and be nice with you guys. Honestly, this job that I have now has ruined me. I don't take shit from like anybody anymore. I had to cuss out the Uber driver this morning.
I don't think anyone should take shit. Obviously, that's an idealist or like mentality, but you shouldn't be taking other people's shit. Like, why can't we just like live in a world where people don't give out shit? Like,
That's a good point. I just feel like maybe it's the way I was raised and being from the South and being a Southerner. You know, you're always, you know, excusing yourself. It's always like, you know, bless your heart, or I'm sorry, let me get out of the way. You know, you kind of make yourself smaller, mm-hmm. And try not to take up so much space. Mm-hmm. And I see that from my family. I see that from a lot of my friends and growing up. So I also internalized a lot of that. And so I think it has been very difficult for me to claim my space and always stand up for myself in, you know, in different situations. Mm-hmm. So I was very proud of myself for standing up to this organization and telling them I'm not paying shit. And here's why.
Yeah, no, I mean, you should be proud of yourself. Like it is really hard. And I think I totally get what you're saying too. Like, I think some of us are just taught to be accommodating always, even at our own expense and like financially or otherwise.
Talk about it. All right.
But financially. Yeah, no, that's a big deal. And like, but at the same time, it goes back to like, I don't know, if you're operating a business or, you know, an organization, whatever it is, like, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to have accountability. And also that's another thing that bothers me is that like, at least for me, like I always try to hold myself accountable whenever I see fit, but I just don't know why that isn't always like reciprocated, you know, from everyone else. Like, yeah, let's all just hold ourselves accountable. If we fuck up, own it and move
on. Right. So. I agree. I just think, you know, at the end of the day, the lesson to the listeners is to always stand up and fight for the things that you know is bullshit. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we talked about on this podcast before, it's one thing to be loud and it's one thing to be wrong, but it's a whole nother thing to be loud and wrong. So don't be one of those people, okay? Don't be a loud or wrong person. But when you know that you're right and you know that it doesn't make fucking sense, then raise your voice and stand up for yourself. And hopefully the lesson for this organization is to A, double, triple, quadruple check your booking and your bills before you send them out. And maybe you should find someone else to be responsible for the billing versus the therapist themselves. They're there to give care, not to also handle the billing.
Yeah, right. That's a lot too to handle. Like, and it probably takes away from their level of care on some level.
Absolutely. Well, how are you, Mona? Mona Bona?
I will also give an update. Last time when Preston was talking about this whole situation with this organization, I was talking about my hydroponics garden. Mm-hmm. as minute as it is, but it's like something that truly brings me joy every day. Like when I'm home, like the first thing I'll do is like run up to the roof and check on my garden. I have like the hydroponics garden, and then I have like a pepper plant and tomato plant that are also growing, and everything's bearing fruit. I'm not going to starve.
I'm so proud of you. Like, that is amazing.
Yeah. It's been something that has really like, it's brought me a lot of joy, and it's been fun to like take care of and actually see, like, I have zucchini now. I have tomatoes coming in. I have peppers coming in. I have like a million herbs. I have greens for like four or five salads. So
I'm getting one next year.
You should. It's like 15 minutes of maintenance a week. It's expensive though. So like buying the system is expensive, but
that's fine. I spend tons of money on Sephora.
But like, I think it will pay for itself eventually. Like if you continue to grow it food in it, then that's like food that you're not actually purchasing, you know, at the store. But yeah, it's just, it's changed my days. It's just made them a lot better. And I don't know, it's just a good way to start the day. There's like a lot of intention with it. If anyone's interested, it's the lettuce grow system. And yeah, it's easy. It's like literally 15 minutes of maintenance a week. So yeah, that's my update.
That's great. That's amazing.
As my dude is like, compared to Preston taking on whole organizations, I'm like over here with my little garden.
I want a garden as well, though. I just don't have the space for it, I don't think. And like, I do have like a patio porch in the back, but it doesn't get a lot of sun. And I'm assuming you need quite a bit of sun.
So with the system that I'm using, you can grow indoors too. You have to buy grow lights and things like that, but you can grow indoors, and like, I'll be moving mine indoors in the winter. I don't know. You don't need a whole lot of space either. I'm like trying to sell this to you. Okay. But I don't make,
I want one. It.
But it only takes like 9 square feet of space. And so if you have that somewhere, you should be fine. Like you should be able to grow. You should be able to get one.
I can like get rid of this chair that I have in my fuck this chair.
Wow. Thanks. it's a great system. And like I've been thinking a lot about sustainability recently. And so this is just another thing that you can do. Like the whole thing's made out of recycled plastic. By growing your own food, you're not contributing to like carbon emissions that are caused by like transporting food, and like you're encouraging pollinators to be like around if you're growing outside. So I'm still on this journey. I don't think it's perfect. I don't think anyone's perfect when it comes to sustainability, but if we can all do a little bit.
Yeah. We should one day talk about the pros and cons of sustainability.
Yeah, totally. Well, and there's a lot of myths too. Like I've been learning so much. Like I came into the summer wanting to be zero waste, and I've let go of that ideal.
Can you be zero waste?
No, you can't. And like you can try to obviously like, you know, reduce your waste and things like that, or like
approach. Maybe have a day, like a zero waste day.
Like Meatless Monday. I think it's more about it's like a lifestyle decision. And so it's just about like finding the little things that you can do that can contribute to producing less waste or reusing or recycling and things like that. But we can talk about that one day. There's a lot of issues. There are a lot of issues and like a lot of myths and a lot. I've learned so much just this last summer on this particular topic. But yeah, we'll save that for another episode.
Okay.
But today we kind of want to talk about leadership styles.
Yeah.
I don't think Preston and I have really talked about this much, but I do think that, like, obviously Preston's in a great role to talk about leadership. And so I want to know more. And I also want to know, like, what I do that's different in terms of leadership. So
yeah,
Preston, like, if you had to describe your leadership style, what would you say? What would you, is there a word for it?
That's a good question. I think, I'm just trying to think back when I was a little tot and I was an undergraduate student at Baylor University. And one of the things that they, in one of the classes that I took, it was a leadership style class. And I honestly can't remember much from it. But the one thing that stood out to me was this term called being a servant leader. And I think the whole idea of being a servant leader is basically kind of with the thought of, like, don't ask someone to do something that you're not going to do yourself type mm-hmm. of thing. So it's like leading from a place of empathy and understanding, and like letting your team and the people around you know that, like, you're also in the trenches with them. Like, you'll do it too. So I'm not asking you to go and, you know, rake the yard if I too am not going to be out in the yard doing things with you.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
So that always resonated with me. And I don't know if I am, as of today, you know, in my current role, and if I would call myself a servant leader. But I think at the core and the foundation of how I approach things, I typically lean on that ideal.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Me, so that's like, that's really interesting. I think, I think of like two like moments that I think I was in these strong leadership roles. So one was actually at Texas A&M when I was starting this maternal child health organization. It originally started as like, we all wanted to like kind of have a nonprofit eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And this like thing, this idea was like one of my brain children, but a brain child is something that you just like come up with in your brain and you just like, you know, you nurture it and you grow it into something. That's my term for it. I don't know if that's like a generic term, but that's the term I use. In that like organization, I really wanted everyone to be equals. Like, I didn't want there to be labels, for the sake of like, you know, making the organization legitimate at Texas A&M. We did have to like put on, you know, president and vice president and like treasurer and things like that. But in terms of how we operated, at least while I was there, we didn't follow that. Like, I really wanted everyone to be an equal and feel like they had an equal voice. And, you know, an equal say. And like, so if they had an idea, they should feel free to present it. If they didn't agree with the idea, they should feel free to like voice it. I didn't want any type of like, feeling that one person was more powerful than the other. And I think that really worked for us in a lot of ways. Cause I think because of it, we were able to generate more ideas and develop ideas that became a lot more impactful than like maybe where the vision originated.
Why is that important for you to not have, or to have everyone be an equal?
Cause I think part of it for me is that I don't trust myself necessarily with power. Like, I think I'm innately a very petty and manipulative person.
Okay.
And I just like, I didn't want that to overshadow like the potential of the group. And so I never wanted to be in a position where I could fall into this pattern of like being manipulative or, you know, acting on a petty thought or whatever. Like, you know, I wanted it to be where like very democratic, I guess, in terms of like everyone having an equal say and equal, you know, partnership in it. And I also think that having that like as a fundamental value of a group also allows people to have their own like a motivation to be involved and invested into the project, because they are just as important as, you know, the quote unquote president or the vice president or the, you know, whoever. Everyone has an equal role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also like allowed people to capitalize on their own personal strengths, because they think that we all bring different things to the table. And so, yeah, I just thought that was really important to you know, kind of build upon within the group. But in a current role that I'm in, like with a, as a program manager, I do think, like, I don't really know if there's a term or anything like that, but I think the way I approach leadership is through like building a relationship where people feel like they're seen and heard. Because I feel like with my staff, I feel like I have a really good relationship with all of them. They know they can come to me if they're stressed out, if they're, you know, struggling. And I feel like it puts a burden on me that I'm like, but I'm very happy to take on that burden, because what will happen is, like, you know, they might come to me and say like, hey, I'm like burnt out, I'm stressed out. And then I can go and like talk to, you know, the people above me about how we can streamline the process so that our staff isn't getting burned out. Because right now with this particular group, we have a dream team. Like we all work so well together. We all, they're all like just super motivated. They care about the project. And I think we're really lucky to have those kind of attitudes present on our team. And mm-hmm. so I think it's really important that we protect and nurture that as well. And so I definitely feel like I've built a relationship where no one feels afraid to come to me when they're struggling. And I think that's important too, because I think hidden struggle is also a big barrier to efficient functioning of mm-hmm. any group. So those are the two leadership styles that I think I have.
I think that's interesting. So I feel like I want to play devil's advocate, because I don't necessarily disagree with anything you've said. I think I too have elements of that collaborative, you know, culture mm-hmm. that I want to infuse into my teams as well. But my question, my devil's advocate question to you is, so when does it become disruptive? When, if you're always trying to make sure people feel included and heard and make sure that no voice is louder than the other, and that, you know, it's always fostering this collaborative environment, when do you feel like it gets to a point where it is actually decreasing productivity?
That's a good question. And so, like, of course, that, you know, we have in both situations come to these points where there's like, you know, things become stagnant. And I think that's where, like, you know, when something becomes stagnant, other people feel the liberty to speak up and be like, hey, like, maybe we should move forward with something. Because, you know, there have been times when people get stuck on like a budget, or they get stuck on like an idea. Like, for example, there was like some posters that we created for the maternal child health student organization. And, but the reason why I kept moving forward was because, there was always another voice saying like, hey, we can like keep moving. Like, we don't have to stay on this idea, or like, let's unstick ourselves, or whatever it was. And so the disruption, I guess, would be like people getting stuck on the idea. But the reason why it continued to work is because other people felt at liberty to speak up and continue moving like whatever progress forward. I think when we started attaching labels, that's kind of when things became unproductive. Because I just remember, like, when we were presenting one of the posters, like, the first author, you know, was supposed to be speaking and stuff like that. But they didn't know who their audience was. And they were also not the strongest speaker in the group. Meaning they had the ideas, like the whole poster was their idea. The way we did the research was their idea. It was a great idea, very unique take on maternal child health, because we were looking at, you know, how male prisoners, like how people who were in like the prison system who are male, how them returning to their family affected, you know, their family dynamic. But maybe our poster would have done better if it wasn't expected that the first author would be the only one speaking. You know, so things like that, like.
Because see, what's interesting with your example right now to me is that, you know, you're talking about a situation or an environment where it is kind of, you're all technically on the same level, right? Like your peers. But you are trying to define a hierarchy that in nature is really not, like there's nothing substantial holding that together. And so it's almost like people feel like, you know, so you have these differing opinions. Like some people, maybe a person who's like, this is my idea. I came up with this. I should be the main voice. And then you have other people saying, well, that's not your skill.
Right.
I'm here. You know, you're not good at that. I'm here and I feel like I'm better at communicating, even though it is your idea, but you're not good at communicating that. That's not your strength. So let me take that piece. And so it seems like it has a higher opportunity for there to be this kind of butting heads.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good point. And I think like maybe we just weren't together long enough for that to happen. But I think also like people who aren't good at speaking usually aren't also the people who don't want to speak. Like, you know, like I'm happy to speak in front of a large group of people. Like I have no problem getting up and volunteering myself to do that, but there are people who don't want to do that. And, maybe I'll toot my own horn. I think I am okay with getting up in front of a huge group of people and speaking. I have done that on numerous occasions. I went to communication magnets my entire life. And so it's not something that phases me or scares me at all, but there are people who it does phase or scare. And it's not even that, like the person, they didn't want to be the one speaking. They were told they had to speak by someone outside of our little group. And so that was the other thing too. It's like, I think that when people have a strength, like they speak up about it. And when they don't, they, you know, won't volunteer for it unless they want some type of personal growth. But I think that was, that would always be part of the conversation. But yeah, we never like, again, I think that that's totally valid. And I think like, had we, you know, continued our little dreams of starting this nonprofit, maybe things would have been different. Like maybe we would have come across those type of barriers and we would have clashed on some level. But that didn't happen as far as like the amount of time that we were operating together. And I think also like the other thing too, is like at the end of the day, there, like, as much as we didn't want there to be an authority figure, there still somewhat was, which would have been me, since like the entire idea stemmed from something that I came up with. But I never pushed that forward in a way where like, you know, where I, like I was fully in charge. I never wanted that. But I think that had it come down to like a moment when maybe that was needed, then I would have stepped in and said something. And there was like also times like when we were wrapping up the student organization part of it, there was some friction surrounding like the person who's going to take on the president role and the VP role. And I had some feelings. So I had seen like the pot being stirred by a particular person. And then the following year, the organization kind of seemed to dissolve because that person wasn't even present to be in the role that they signed up for. So.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head on a lot of the reasons why I love leadership, but I hate group activities in school settings. And even in work settings, I kind of hate it, but I don't have the same type of issues at work. But in school settings in particular, everything you're talking about, I think a lot of people can relate to and see in their own experience, because you have people who fight for these positions, these leadership roles, but honestly and truly, 9 times out of 10, their motivation is flawed. in wanting that role. Their motivation is typically because they want to put it on their resume.
Yeah, right.
But not because they truly have a vision, not because they truly believe in, you know, the mission of that organization. It's simply to be able to say, I was the president, and put that on their resume. And when you are motivated by that, then you can't be an effective leader. You know, before I get into, because you mentioned a few things. You mentioned, I still wanted to go back to this collaborative idea. And I find it very interesting because it is it's such a hot buzzword that organizations use.
Is it really?
Absolutely. Especially in healthcare. The organizations that I've ever interacted with, even when it comes to like the consultants that we've, you know, we might have brought in into the organization to kind of evaluate what we're doing. A pillar that always comes up time and time and time and time and time again is collaboration. And so hold on, two things, because I don't want to forget the other one. Strengths. Remind me to touch on that just in case I forget. But collaboration. So in my previous organization, we were collaborative to a fault. I hated how collaborative we were because we could not move forward unless everybody and their mother agreed with the direction. And then what would typically happen is you would get everyone in agreement in the beginning. You would work, move forward. And then you'll get to a point where you're ready to either launch the pilot or you're ready to, like, you know, pull the trigger. And then one person from that group was like, but wait, we forgot, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and now all of that work will either A, stop, or we are now changing directions completely. Mm-hmm. So there was a project that I was working on when I was a fellow, and it had a lot of eyes on it. And it was one of the top projects from our CEO at the organization. And he was like, Preston, my God, so cute. He was like, we just saw a cat. Mona has a cat. And the cat is so cute. It's a fluffy cat. It had a lot of eyes on it. The CEO was always kind of checking in on it, and I would have to report kind of the progression of that project at our top CEO strategy meeting. I mean, it was a huge project. And I say that because every leader had an opinion about it, even when it did not touch anything that they did. So here we are as an organization, and one of our pillars is being collaborative, but we do it to a fault, to where we are now even considering the opinion of someone that this project doesn't even touch. Mm-hmm. And at some point, when do you cut it off? When do you draw the line? And when do you say, thank you for your opinion, but this is the direction that we're moving in? And you put their opinion in a box and you lock it away, and you focus on the people, the stakeholders who truly have a dog in the fight. Mm-hmm. And I think that's my gripe with the collaborative mindset.
Yeah, that totally, like, that makes sense. And I don't think that we were that collaborative. Like, we didn't all have to be on the same page for something to happen. It was more like if the majority thought it was a good idea. Right. Mm-hmm. I could see that being very frustrating, especially the part where someone would like halt the project and like bring up some idea, because I have recently had to deal with that. And, but it was a little bit different because I think this person just was not well versed in like whatever they were talking about. Like, they were talking about consent and dealing with the IRB. And, it was just very obvious that they didn't know what they were talking about.
Right.
But like, my counterpoint kind of like to what you're also saying is that because right now I'm a PhD student, I'm at the bottom of the totem pole, I didn't feel like I could speak up and say, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know, like right. if everyone was equal, I could have been like, I could have said, maybe not like that harshly, you don't know what you're talking about, but like, oh, well, this is how you would handle that, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, maybe it has like, maybe, you know, I think collaboration is really important, but I don't, if it's going to come at the cost of no progress, or if it's coming at the cost of just being almost too inclusive to the point where people who aren't invested or don't care about the project or aren't being touched by the project are being involved, then yeah, that might be like a boundary that needs to be, you know, implemented. That's my opinion, of course, but like, I do think that there has to still be boundaries within a collaborative effort. And I don't think like it should, it kind of like what you said kind of reminds me of like the Brady Bunch, where like, it's like this happy-go-lucky, like family that just always gets along and like no conflict and blah, blah, blah. No, like none of this was like always pretty. Or I don't expect things to be pretty. I think things should be messy sometimes, but because I think a lot of growth comes out of, you know, messiness. But it kind of sounds like your group was just wanting everyone to be feel included at all times and involved at all times. But I don't know.
I just think when it comes to, I don't know. I think I just collaboration is a triggering term for me. And I understand the sentiment behind it. And I too, and I don't want to sound like I don't want to collaborate with anyone and I just want to work in a vacuum and, you know, be by myself.
We're collaborating right now.
Absolutely. Like collaborating is absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
I think, but to my point in collaboration is that it leads me to my next idea that someone has to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're overly collaborative, when you're overly like, everyone is equal, then who's the leader? Because if you have multiple kitchens, and I don't know if you've been in these type of situations, maybe, I'm sure you have, but it's like, when there are multiple cooks in the kitchen and everybody thinks that their way is the right way.
Oh my gosh.
Then how do you move to completion? How do you get that project to completion? And I honestly and truly have not found it to ever be successful. When everyone thinks that they're the boss, it doesn't work.
No, and I think that's a good point too. And I think like, again, with this group, I think we got lucky because we weren't all like type A, you know, or type B or whatever, you know, we all were different in different ways. But like, I remember when I was working in the Navy, my like division officer, had us all take this test that like determined if we were a lion, a beaver, what was it? Lion, beaver, otter, and golden retriever, something like that. Jeez. And it was like, funny because everyone in the EDC was like, I think there was like, they were like a lion or a beaver. And I was like one of two otters.
So explain.
I don't remember like what the definition is. Let me look up what. So pause.
Because while you're looking that up, it reminds me of another model that we used called the DISC model, where DISC, D-I-S-C, what was the DISC? Oh, the DISC. The D was driver. I is for innovator. An S was for stabilizer. And the C was for a calculator. And the idea is that a person would fall into one of these four quadrants.
Yeah, very similar, I think. Yeah.
So explain, did you find it?
Yeah, I found it. So like a lion is someone who takes charge. They're determined, assertive, firm, enterprising, competitive, enjoys challenges. They're bold, purposeful. They're a decision maker, a leader, goal-driven, self-reliant, and adventurous. Mm-hmm. And they're like the let's do this now mentality. For an otter, we take risks. We're visionaries, motivators. We're energetic, very verbal, promoters, avoid details. Oh my gosh, that one is so true for me. Fun-loving, likes variety, enjoys change, creative, group-oriented, collaboration. Nyx is easily and optimistic, and we have a trust me, it'll work out mentality. And then golden retrievers are loyal, non-demanding, even keel, avoids conflict, enjoys routine, dislikes change, deep relationships, adaptable, sympathetic, thoughtful, nurturing, patient, tolerant, and a good listener. And they have a let's keep things the way they are mentality. And then the beaver is deliberate, controlled, reserved, predictable, practical, orderly, factual, discerning, detailed, analytical, inquisitive, precise, persistent, scheduled. And mm-hmm. how was it done in the past? And so it makes sense that a lot of the people that, you know, we worked with were either lions or beavers, given that we were working with data and it was really important that it was precise. But like I said, I was one of two otters, and there were conflicts in our group, just because, like, again, what you were saying, the too many cooks in the kitchen type of mentality, because everyone wanted the same thing, but I think they also wanted to be in control of how that was executed. And I think that could be a problem. And so maybe part of like collaborative efforts also need to take into account like that these different personalities are also present, which Absolutely. Also builds upon these different strengths. But again, that it would curation of a group is probably a lot harder than just like getting everyone on board who's interested.
Absolutely. You know, so remember I said, remind me of strength. So this goes into that idea because you talked earlier about everyone bringing their own strengths to the table. And that made me think, you know, of all of these different models, right? Like you just named one about the animals, which mirrors the one I just mentioned about the disc, mm-hmm. because the driver is someone who is getting the work done. They're the person who you want to like push it through. They're going to make sure all the boxes are checked. Your innovators, they're the big picture. They don't get into the details. They like to think about, you know, what is the overarching goal, the motivation? Like, where are we going? How do we get there? How do we inspire other people to come along for the ride? Mm-hmm. Then you have your stabilizers. They're the ones who are the golden retrievers. They're like, you know, when is everybody's birthday? You know, like, we need to make sure that we celebrate all of our milestones and that we truly, you know, are able to show the impact and the growth that we are having with this project. Like they're the ones who are thinking all about those touchy-feely emotion things. And then you have your calculators, which would be the beavers, who are thinking about the pros and the cons. Mm-hmm. They want the data, they want the numbers, they want to know what is fact from what is not. Mm-hmm. So they say in a truly great, well-rounded group, you have people who fit into each of these quadrants. Mm-hmm. So you'll have some people who are a lion, you'll have beavers, you'll have golden retrievers, and you'll have some otters. Mm-hmm. And together, you kind of have this very well-rounded collaborative team.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you feel like you have ever been in a situation where people have fit? You've had good people who have fit into these quadrants that have made the experience worthwhile.
I mean, currently, like in my group, like I said, I do think I have at least that. I also like want to put in the caveat is that like these tests kind of tell us that we're one or the other. Like, but I think in reality, we all have a little bit of all of them in us.
Absolutely.
Like it comes out when it's needed. So like, for example, I definitely think like in the role that I'm in now, I am more of a lion or a beaver. Mm-hmm. But like in the Navy, I was more of an otter just because like, I think everyone was just so like uptight around me. Like people used to say that I was a type A personality, but I feel like in the Navy, I'd be like, wait, compared to everyone else, I'm definitely not type A. But I think it was me like kind of molding to the environment because, everyone around me, like, obviously they took their job very seriously and they're a lot more disciplined, not that I wasn't, but I guess I was also kind of like the ditzy fun one. And that's why I was the otter in the group.
Ditzy?
I
don't see that out.
uh, Catch me on a night when I have a slump. No. But I mean, I think that there's a lot of that. Like I have like right now, I would say I'm in a group that like, I wouldn't say there's like people who are designated into one role or another. But the way we work together, like everyone has a role that requires a little bit of each one of these sub personalities or whatever. And I think the underlying thing is that everyone really cares about their role. They care about the study. They care about the outcome of the study. They care about doing a good job. And so they have taken on like the different roles. But the other thing is that there is still a hierarchy where I'm the program manager and they are the people who handle, you know, working with the participants. And then there's obviously the people above me who are telling me what I should do, telling them what they should do. But at the same time, I still feel like maybe that the collaborative part comes in because none of them are, they're not like, we'll have like a team meeting once a week and they will always bring up like, so how is this being done? How is everyone else doing this? But the fact that they don't feel afraid to do that or afraid to ask questions or to voice an opinion, I think that's the value, the part that makes our team so strong because their voice is heard.
So what I'm hearing
is there is a hierarchy.
So we're going to explore the hierarchy because I love and hate the hierarchy. Yeah. But what I'm also hearing, which I wonder, is it different? So I'm hearing that you appreciate that you're in an environment that is psychologically safe. Mm-hmm. And when I think about the term psychologically safe, that means that people do feel like they can, you know, voice their opinion. They can call bullshit on somebody. They can hold people, their peers, accountable. They can hold people above them in the hierarchy accountable because you feel like you're in a safe environment that if you do say something, you're not going to be reprimanded or lose your job or X, Y, and Z.
Well, and that definitely that. I also think there's this theme of trusting each other, that we're all doing what we're supposed to be doing. Like there's no one checking over, you know, anyone's shoulder to make sure that they're doing their job correctly.
There's transparency. Yeah. I would say that collaboration is a symptom, not the cause.
Okay.
Of
sure.
Of the things that you're describing now, because you guys have this psychologically safe environment, because there's transparency, because you guys understand how to trust each other and communicate effectively, you're able to collaborate effectively.
Yeah, you know, and I think you're right. I think that's a really good observation. Wow, look at you. Dang.
Because I hate collaboration. I have a love-hate relationship.
You like collaboration if it's a symptom, not if it's a cause.
Right. Like I don't want to collaborate with someone or a team because someone is telling me that that is
how it's going
to
be done.
Right. Like that's what we need to do in order to get to the goal. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some teams should work individually.
Yeah.
And come together and put it all together and make it make sense. Mm-hmm. But when you are collaborative to a fault, it's almost like you uphold collaboration over everything else.
Yeah.
And I would much prefer for us to have this natural ability to collaborate because there's mutual respect between each other. Like if you and I doing this podcast didn't have a mutual respect, and trust in each other, then we wouldn't enjoy it and we wouldn't collaborate.
Sure, right. You're right. It would be an unhealthy situation. Right. Yeah.
And we would just feel forced to do it. We would feel like, oh, well, I got to work with this girl, so let me go and do it, you know? That's not like... Wow,
that's like the highest compliment right there.
Here's Mona again for another week. So I don't know. I'm just being a Debbie Downer and a devil's advocate with the word collaboration.
I think you brought up a lot of good points. Like, I still think, like, the way the Maternal Child Health Organization, we worked really well together, I would say. But I don't know if that was on accident. That might have been on accident. Like, you know, it just so happened that we worked well together. But I totally get what you're saying. Because I think having too many cooks in the kitchen, like, that could be disastrous. And there is another study that I'm on where it kind of feels like that sometimes. But it's like the worry is that there's going to be too many cooks in the kitchen. And because of that, they didn't get enough cooks. And because of that, now, like, there's things burning in the oven.
Right. Oh, that's a good point. So, like, when you think about the models that we said, if you have no lions in the team, if you have no drivers in the team, then you do kind of have tons of people who are checking facts, checking data, worrying about birthdays, and also thinking about the big picture of, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we had X amount of immediate cares in the area?
Yeah.
But then you have no one to say, well, if you want that, here's how it has to get done.
Right. No, definitely. And I think all personalities need to be present, or there has to be someone who's willing to take on these important, like, qualities that will help drive the team or whatever it is, like, allow there to be morale, the birthdays, whatever. Like, there has to be someone who makes other people feel seen too, as much as we make fun of that too. Like,
it's funny because, to a point you said, of just having to wear different hats in different situations, I do feel like in the past when I've taken these, you know, quizzes and they would put me in one of the four quadrants, I have always been the beaver or the otter. The otter or the innovator.
Interesting.
Because I also care about big ideas and strategy. Like, strategy is my, like, judge. I want to be a strategist. That is what I dream and hope to be one day, a chief of strategy.
Side note, Nicki Minaj, we're still waiting to hear back from you. Anyway.
Hello. It's like, girl, I have all the tips. Just come. Okay. I can help you. But, like, that is what I love, putting pieces together.
Yeah.
So that's where I feel like I am meant to live. Mm-hmm. But in the role that I'm in currently, I cannot exist in that space primarily. A lot of the times have to be the driver. And a lot of that is because of the hierarchy that we have, where I am the practice manager. Mm-hmm. And the practice manager, even though I am middle management compared to, like, how you can move up in leadership with the organization, I'm still at the bottom of the totem pole, basically. Because it's practice manager, then director, then you can be like an assistant VP, and then a VP, and then a president. So, like, you can keep moving up. And so I am technically at the bottom of the totem pole with the leadership piece, but I have people who are even more on the front lines who report to me.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to the hat that I have to wear, I find that I primarily have to have the driver and the lion hat on, because they look to me to answer questions, to tell them what to do. I don't always have the answer, so I have to, like, go and investigate it. So I can't just exist in this big picture and not get into the weeds. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times I have to drive initiatives forward. But I feel like now, you know, I never really get to take that hat off. I just get to, like, I don't know, add a visor of the other ones. Like, being a driver, the lion is my overarching hat that I have to wear. But then there are times where I have to inspire and motivate, like, my physicians, because they don't report directly to me.
Right.
But I have to influence them to do what I need them to do.
Yeah.
So it's.
But I think, I think that goes back to the point that, like, these roles are not just cut and dry, right? Like, there's not a boundary that says that you can't be inspirational as a driver, or you can't be into birthdays.
Birthdays. I can't. If I never have to, you know, celebrate another person's birthday, I would just be the happiest person ever because I'm so tired. Everybody has a birthday every effing week, Mona. Right. I promise you. And I have a small team. I have a small team compared to some people who have like 40, 50 people. You're always celebrating a birthday. I'm not. I'm just not doing it. I hate it.
For everyone, if you have a birthday in the month of August, we're celebrating on the 15th.
That's what we do. Yeah. But then I find myself having to like take the initiative to go get the card.
Oh.
Or, yeah, you know, get the gift card. You know, how do I ask people to give money when I already know that they don't make a lot, you know, and they have families and things. So I just feel like at the end of the day, if I want that person to have something, I just take it upon myself to do it.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I think that it's just like a... Yeah. I mean, I guess the point was that you're not just what, you know, one or the other. Like, you can be a hybrid or you can have like the essence of another one within your role.
Yeah.
But you know what's also funny? I was just thinking about this, like in the Navy, somehow I became the cupcake person. Like, everyone would pay, like we would all chip in, but I would be the one who had to coordinate how to get cupcakes to the office.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that happened.
I'm just never fucking. I hate it. And that's why I left my last job, because I was focusing on like physician wellness. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to always function in the driver and the innovator space and think about like, what can we do that's tactical to really help our doctors feel better and not burnt out? Like, that was like, like, that's what I wanted to do. But I ended up always freaking planning a lunch because all they wanted was food. They would be like, if you could just get us lunch, we would love that. So I was always planning effing Panera. Mona, I had to leave.
This is also reminding me, like, I just remember one time, was it for like TAMS or something? Were you the person who had to bring the food too? Like,
I was social chair.
Yeah.
Fuck me. And I don't know why I did it. I didn't know who I was at that point. I didn't know that I hated planning.
Yeah. No, I just like remember that, because I remember one time you bringing in this platter and you were like telling everyone which ones were like vegan and which ones were like...
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. I forgot all about that moment. Shoot. I would have to go to like Peter Pit.
Yeah.
And get these like sandwiches. And it was always like closer to my apartment somehow. And so I would just go and get it and bring it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I hated it. Hated it. Hated it.
But yeah, that's just funny. I like, because it's funny that you like fell into that role kind of again. And now you're like running away from it.
I can't. Yeah. I hate it. And now that I have to do it, like one of my team members, her last day was this past Tuesday. And no one else had went and got decorations, and no one else went and, you know, got food, and there was a potluck, so people did bring certain stuff. But I had to go and get pizza. Yeah. I had to run and get things from Target. I was like, this is BS. I have to find someone else to do it. I have an assistant. She was out for the week, so she couldn't do it. And she gives me attitude. So she also is like, I don't really do that either. And I want to say, I don't care. Like, get it done.
But so do you think like having to do that, do you think that's part of a leadership style? Like, do you think the lion or like a, what's the other one? Driver?
The driver is the lion.
Okay.
The innovator is the otter.
Okay. So do you think like they would have to ever do that? Like, or do you think like what, so in terms of planning a lunch, what is the driver's role? And if that was like the group activity.
So that's a good question. So if the project is plan the birthday lunch and everybody is at the table, to work on that one project, right? Then within that project, the driver would be the one that had the list that says, okay, we need balloons, we need napkins, we need plates, we need forks, we need chicken wings. And but within chicken wings, you have to have the buffalo, we need the garlic parm, and we need Korean the lemon pepper, the Korean barbecue. Then we need, so they're the ones who is driving this project forward. You can think of them as kind of like the project manager. They're the ones pushing it, mm-hmm. right? I don't even want to be at the table. My piece, from the way I want it to work, is that as the driver, I say, hey, Sarah, my assistant, do you mind working on that birthday party and getting it, you know, together by Tuesday of next week? Sarah will say, sure, I don't mind. And I'm done.
So what's Sarah's role? Like, what is she? Is she?
And now Sarah is taking the role of the driver.
Okay.
Even though she may not be a driver naturally, maybe she likes to be the calculator. And she likes data, and she likes, you know, understanding how many cakes are sold in the U.S., you know, in 2021. Maybe right. That's what she cares about. However, her job is to assist the manager.
So, like,
I need her assistance.
It's like designating tasks to everyone else. And so that's when the calculator becomes the driver for this, like, sub.
Right.
Piece. Okay.
Right. And then she becomes that driver, and I have charged her to be the leader and to make sure it pushes through. Okay. How she gets that done, I don't give a shit. So you, if she chooses to do it all herself and not collaborate and not ask anybody, have fun.
Sure.
If she chooses to delegate task within that project to other people, mm-hmm. I think that would be the best thing for her. She won't have so much on her plate. And if that's what she wants to do, I fully support it. Get all the help you need. Mm-hmm. Just don't include me. I absolutely don't want to be a part of it. So
that's fair. Okay.
That's where I am with that. So birthdays, I'm not your stabilizer. I don't give a shit about your birthday typically. I don't even care about my birthday half the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those big people who's like, it's my birthday, you know, a month in advance. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm not like that either. I could care. So I take that back. So I don't care about my birthday, but I'm happy to celebrate other people's birthdays. Or other people's like milestones or whatever. But okay, so in terms of being a driver, what are the strengths and weaknesses of that role?
So if you want to hear us continue this conversation, definitely come back to tune in next week to hear the second half and hear what Preston has to say about being a driver, what the strengths and limitations are. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We always appreciate your support. Until next time, take care.